Radio Face. We are an irreverent podcast about music, news, and culture that mostly matters. I am Sean.
I am Dan.
This is the episode 222 bonus, the coveted, the anticipated annual State of the Music Industry episode that we always like to give you fine listeners, fine organic listeners, clean, wholesome, USADA grain organic listeners.
Madam Speaker, yes. The President of the United Music. Or I should have said, the President of the Union of Musicians and Allied Workers.
I was literally about to say that. I'm like, come on now, you know where I would stand.
You know what podcast this is.
You know who it is. So it's always one of my favorite things I look forward to every year around this time, early, you know, late winter, early spring. Always love doing this. Just to kind of give you guys an idea of what is shaping out for the year for music and the industry, the ins and outs, the pay, the what's coming out, the sounds and everything that go on, us, our opinions on everything as well too. And it's always interesting to revert back and to hear what we said at the end, like towards the end of the year, to hear back what we said now and see what plays out. We have correctly predicted a lot of things with the industry, notably Spotify, the sounds of like indie taking over the rock genre and a bunch of other stuff. And there's a lot of things, so it's might as well go into it right away.
Yeah, I am looking forward to, I'll just say like my thoughts are, this is probably gonna be like the fifth time we've done this, and I enjoy, yep, whether it's the fourth, the fifth, or the 20th, I really enjoy, like, this is what Audioface began as. This is us talking about, hey, what is, like, because it was rare that I had a friend, because of course, like, you're one of my best friends for a number of other different reasons, but I didn't have many friends, so I could just go about all of music or all of a genre sounds like this. What will it sound like in the future? Or like, what's annoying about it now? Like, those little gripes we had about music that we liked but wanted to be different sort of began this cadence of us listening to new music on the search of things we like every single week that we share with y'all. So it's a really nice to do this conversation. And we usually break it up by starting with different major music genres, or like grouping them together and talking about what we observed from the last year, what we observed from the first couple months of this year, keeping in mind that, of course, a lot of stuff that was released first couple months of this year was still made last year, but you can still kind of read the tea leaves and see, you know, where genres are going, what things might sound like in the future. And it's a fun conversation. Exactly. So really fast, just before we get into the big stuff, make sure you follow Audioface Pod on Twitter and Instagram at Audioface Pod, so you keep track of all the stuff we're doing. If you're a Syndicate 23 member, you're listening to this episode early, so thank you for your support. But if you're not a member, you can support us and get early episodes and join our special like community as well that I'm starting to build out for talking about music like this at join.syndicate23.co. We really appreciate your support. It helps us go a long way and helps us grow the show. So now let's get into the state of the music genres, and maybe we should start with this. Overall, music. How is it? I think that, you know, the relevance of music is still high. I think you had a lot of, especially when we were doing the first couple episodes of Audioface, we talked about music so much and how it intersected with politics because everyone had their like anti-Trump protest song. Yeah. And the anti-Biden songs are just like, you know, political hack jobs, and so they aren't really worth musical.
It's redundant. Like, it's not there.
They're being made by people who aren't musicians and Kid Rock, so like it's not really worth our time. But I still think music has a sense of relevance in culture the same way, you know, like all other forms of arts and entertainment do, reflective of the culture.
Look at the Super Bowl halftime show. I mean, look how big that was just in the populace in general. Talking about people are like, oh my God, I can't wait for that show because of how many big artists are there and everything. And then naturally you have Ben Shapiro complaining about it because he's a rapper and fuck music. So like, you still always have those things, but you could see, like, that really showed me how engaging people still are of good musicians or popular musicians.
Older musicians with the Super Bowl, to be said, but still, good musicians. But let's go into some of the genres now. So pop and neo-pop. We call R&B neo-pop because it's an acknowledgement that R&B is a racist name for a music genre. It's just black people music. That's all it was like pigeonholed into being. And now we do this mix of callback to soul and blues and music like that in a modern era. Oftentimes it's called neo soul, and I think that's a better term, but I'd like to acknowledge the fact that pop music just sounds like this. Like, even the white artists are trying to make their songs sound more 100%. Trap and B and R&B. So we use the term neo-pop to acknowledge the neo-soul aspects of it, but also acknowledge that this is just popular music now. You can no longer pigeonhole this and say this is just one race's or one ethnicity's music. This is just the music that everyone makes now. Comes from those roots, and those roots shouldn't be forgotten, but they're nearly one the same. That being said, pop is still its own separate category, changing every single year. But I'd say the pop sound and the neo-pop sound are very one and the same. We're still getting this kind of, in what I've been kind of tired of, like we're okay with for the past couple years, but now we're tired of this callback to the 80s in pop music.
Yeah.
I'm still seeing a lot of that, and I want to see something else.
Yeah, like in indie, which we'll touch on in a little bit, it's a little bit better because more people are experimenting with it in the way, but for just general pop music for it, it's starting to get bland with the 80s sound. And a lot of the ideas, too. I mean, you're naturally going to have your artists now that are experimenting more within pop, which I like. I mean, artists like Billie Eilish, you know, something that we do admire on this podcast, you know, she's opened the floodgates on more and more people becoming more pop artists getting to be more experimental within the ways that they make music. And even within that, you also have some indie tropes that can, you know, surface in, like Olivia Rodrigo's album record last year. You have a lot of indie and rock sounds and stuff that are in there that are really getting through it. You have Taylor Swift and a couple others who are throwing more indie sounds and more retro sounds in there as well, which I like. But a lot of them now are, you know, throwing in these 80s synths, they're throwing in these 80s keyboards and stuff, and it's just, it's getting overdone and overplayed to the point where, okay, cool, that was a sound that was, you know, obviously revolutionary when it hit, and it was cool to hear throwback things and whatnot, but if you just use that and no other sound and no other inspirations, then it could get very bland, and after a while, and we've been getting that a ton here, I would like to see more artists, you know, take that and be like, hey, here's this 80s sound, and then to go above and beyond with it. But I don't think that's going to happen. I think there's going to be a similar sound-ish this year, but not necessarily like an 80s thing, but there's going to be one thing that all the pop artists do. That's what's a trend that has happened every time, because, you know, a lot of them work with very similar producers, and that's what happens. It's happened throughout, you know, music history, where there'll be one certain sound, one that becomes popular, and then it just explodes. But another thing I think we have to touch on, too, within pop is the influences of TikTok and other social media that has on popular music, because that is an avenue that really exploded last year and showing just how big certain songs can get and how big certain artists can get. But I think, like, something that's always... that is something that I've noticed that gets more and more popular is a really, really high-pitched, annoying voice thing that can get into, like, EDM or other random things that I've heard in pop music and other stuff that people, some God knows why reason, like. Like an auto-tune, high-pitched, like, almost like a baby voice type thing that pops into some music.
So it's something that I
see more and more.
I have some notes on this, and... of course, I talk from being like a music reviewer from 5 years, but in touching the guardrails a little bit, in my like work that I do, it's been on working with the platform. So it's either working and making videos for YouTube and a lot of different outlets and avenues, or making ads for YouTube and TikTok and all these different outlets as well. So I feel really grateful for the position I have and that I'm able to see so many sides of this industry that is so hard to grasp for a lot of people, because it's purposely made hard to grasp for people, because like the more complicated it is, the more fewer people can make money off of it. But
interesting.
What that comes to say is that your thing you're catching on, which is TikTokable moments or songs being made for TikTok, we saw that with Old Town Road. Like, that just kind of took it off the map a couple years ago, where it's like you can make a TikTokable song or like a song that does well on TikTok, and you can spin that into broader success. What I'm seeing just hanging around music producers is that songs are being planned, like, you know, not every single song, because music producers like hate doing this. They're very much like us. They don't want to do the, oh, this is too mainstream or whatever thing, but to get attention, they will figure out, okay, what's a nice TikTokable moment that I can put in this song? And oftentimes that's that high pitched thing that gets people's attention. Mm-hmm. Or it's that flip, because a lot of TikToks are like scene A, scene B, to like contrast something to make a point or make a joke or whatever. And so in doing that in a sound and music, that allows that sound to be reused and then reshared, then people are like, oh, hey, what's that sound? Oh, that's kind of catchy. Let me follow up on that sound and reuse it or reshare it or get that song. So yep.
It just explodes from there.
We have talked about how songs are getting shorter because of music streaming services preferring shorter songs and pushing those up in the algorithm, because that's how you get more plays. And so this is all part of a theme that I love doing these conversations, because big picture, certain artists, for better or for worse, but it's just the name of the game right now, are planning their songs and producing their songs with TikTok in mind.
100%. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely in the pop sense, but you're definitely seeing it in rap and trap and a whole other different spaces as well. Definitely indie, because, you know, bedroom pop indie. And I got some for that in a moment, too. But it is using that as well. But I think to sum up pop and neopop, we want to see more. We want to see different. Some artists who are doing well in this genre, I would say, are, you know, and we're going to say this with rap and trap as well. You make it different by just pulling from other genres that are full of creativity. Right now, indie is full of creativity if you look for it. There's even a lot of creativity going on and bubbling up in electronic as well, if you sift even harder. But, and you know, pop is no stranger to digging from rock and alternative and indie and dipping from electronic when necessary. It dipped from electronic for life about 10 years ago, and it dipped from alternative and indie rock for life about 20 years ago in the aughts and then in the zeros. We still need to do that of the aughts episode, because that would be dope. But
yeah, definitely need to.
Ultimately, like, I would like for pop to take some cues from indie. Because, again, it'll be another, like, kicking the can down the road. The larger problem
is
pop music is what it is. It's a little bit, has to be constrained to be popular. But you can give it some new life for at least another year and a half. I'm already kind of, like, iffy on the pop indie category. I'm a little bit over it myself. But I think if you bring that to the masses, that can be a lot more palatable. Definitely better than this, like, 80s redo and this 90s grunge, which some artist, Biba Doobie, does it, like, perfectly well, and I like that. But when a bunch of other indie artists are like, so yeah, it's 90s all over again. It's
like example, like you get your pop indie, like Conan Gray, where it's just, it's so bland and overgeneralized, where it's just, it's not palatable. And something I think that can be, have a lot of issues. But then you have other artists like The Weeknd, where... you know, even though his, you know, Don FM had a lot of 80s influences and stuff in there, he still made it modern enough to feel new and put a spin on it, which is what I would like to see. If you want to do that sound, go ahead, and but you need to really push that envelope further and whatnot with it. So, but
yeah, I will say so. The newest pop artist on the scene, like you have your Olivia Rodrigo's, Charlie XCX is now like kind of breaking on that, like from the alternative now into the pop thing. And Billie Eilish is still out there. I'm happier with this crop of pop artists than I have been with pop in a while.
Oh, for sure.
It's still your, like, Ariana Grande's here and there, your, like, Bruno Mars's here and there, who, other than Silk Sonic, and I guess we would include Silk Sonic here as well. The funk thing, you can do it a little bit more, but... Silk Sonic has their lane. Other artists like The Internet and Steve Lacy have their lane. I think that's a little bit more room to get some stuff as well. I would still love to see like a full-on funk revolution that we haven't seen the same way we've seen like an 80s revolution. But that would still get very old as well as this. But I think culture could benefit from a little bit of disco right now. I'll just put that.
I swear to God, if there's a culture 8, I'm gonna end this podcast.
Which is a good segue.
This is a great segue to rap and trap. So my joke this year, and for the time being, is my rap / trap, especially trap scores, are all going to be is YB better or not? Because the joke is that every fucking trap record that we get, very few, you know, you got your Snots of the World and then a couple others records, M&A and whatnot, where they really actually experiment and make good records. You know, 21 always, he never misses. So many of them are so incredibly bland that it's just, it's the same recycled beat over and over again that we don't need to hear anymore. And something that, you know, literally we just did with Keen Vaughn, you have these posthumous records that do not need to be made. You have a lot of things that could be done in trap that don't need to be done, but they're done anyways. You know, you have your Pop Smoke records and whatnot and all these other things that don't need to be done, but they're done anyways because, you know, that's going to create attention, is going to create monetary value for a lot of these artists and for a lot of these artists' record labels and everything. And the fact that that's still being done now, and you can hear just how bland and monotone it is, it shows you that rap and trap production, the producers, you know, minus Metro Boomin, maybe a couple others, they ran out of ideas. You know, they've been doing the same beats and stuff for a decade or so, and now they really need to step it forward this year. They need to pull from so many different avenues, which they can do, and you hear it in certain artists. You hear it from Vince Staples, from Snot, from Aminé, a couple other artists, you know, that make really, really good beats, that make, you know, Kenny Beats, like, example, that's a great producer. He has such a wide range.
One of the
You
best in the
can
game.
pull, exactly, you can
It's Ken,
pull from
really
EDM.
fast. Kenny Beats, for example, and Metro Boomin, the ones who break the echelon for us in Audioface about like what is a good producer versus what's just barely scraping it, are artists who have transcended their genre.
Hundred
Kenny Beats started in EDM and then went on to rap, and then just recently killed it with Idols in like alternative punk rock. Okay,
Yeah.
so like then you have Metro Boomin, who starts being trap, almost gets a little bit repetitive out there, but then starts producing the most like thoughtful trap beats out there, then mixes it with James Blake, then mixes it with a whole bunch of other different
Makes
artists,
it with the
and now he's to
weekend.
the moon. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so like, and you get this a little bit with a couple artists as well. Like, I want to shout out, like, there's a I want to there's that one Gorillaz track that was done with a trap artist. Like, I'm totally blanking it out right now, but there's these branches that we do like that, Dead Butterflies, I'll get it later, but there's examples like that where artists can, or like trap producers need to really push it and do better for the rappers. But I'm gonna go even further and say like the rappers are also like not bringing the re like they're not
The
pulling it up here,
male
right?
rappers are really, really bland. Female rappers are fucking killing it. They're really, you know, they're going full guns blazing. Their flow is great. Women are really good in trap, and I just can only see them going up and up and up with their flow. The only thing I worry is that some of the producers in the production can hold them back a little bit, and I don't want that. You know, I don't want that for a lot of female trap artists. I want them to be able to keep going up with their flow and whatnot. But with a lot of the male vocals and stuff, like you have your YB Da Baby, like they're horrible. Honestly, they're really not good. You
Or they're
had St.
one-trick
John last
ponies,
year and
right?
stuff.
Like they have.
Exactly. Oh yeah, they have one thing, but they'll recycle it and make three records in a year, and they don't need to do that. You know, it's just, it gets done to a point where, okay, if you're, you know, a new artist and whatnot, you might get that one flow, that might, one sound that we all like. We're like, cool, that's really good. They'll make one record of it, and then 6 months later, they'll make another record that sounds almost exactly the same, still doing that one trick sound. And the fact that they keep doing that and they're not learning from their mistakes and learning from the lessons of that, it's concerning for the genre, because now the genre to me is dying out. It's
Like it
really
makes us,
starting to just, yeah.
upset
Second.
because our thing about YB better is like a
It's a
trope
joke.
that for some reason Young Boy NBA, at least on DJ Academics' Instagram page, but also in a lot of places, like Young Boy NBA is considered to be like one of the top rappers in the game to beat right now. I'm like, what?
Why?
The
He's
rap
not
game
even
is
over.
down bad, and I'm like, I'm not even trying to say like a, here's the thing, Kendrick Lamar's record's probably gonna drop this year. Like I would, if I were a betting man, and not with money, but with fate, I definitely am a betting man. I would definitely say
Very true.
that, arguably, I would definitely say that Kendrick Lamar is going to be releasing a record this year because, like, he's on the tour circuit. We've gotten all these bubbling different things. He's been referencing it himself. It's been since 2017. That's going to be great for the rap and for the rap in general because Kendrick is one of the GOATs. J. Cole's record was really lackluster. You had a lot of rap records that were kind of lackluster. You
I
have some
mean,
good people to. You have some.
you didn't like it as much as I did. I thought J. Cole's record was okay. Some stuff on here I thought I really liked, and other things I didn't. But
Didn't
example,
last as long
Drake.
as I thought it would, as far as like a mainstream feel. J. Cole.
For sure, for sure. Like, it definitely didn't, it wasn't like KOD, where KOD, you know, could still be played right now, but 21 South and whatnot, it's not going to be played as much, even though there's some decent stuff. I think, like, Meek Mill having a return to form last year is a good thing for him, because he had a lot of influence in trap in general. I mean, you know, his collaborations with Drake and whatnot just, you know, exploded when that happened a few years ago. To hear his record last year, it's interesting to see what he's going to do, especially production-wise, because I think as a producer, he's had some decent hits and whatnot the past year. So I want to see what he can do. But the biggest ones to me that really spelled trouble for a lot of the male rapper and trap artists are Drake and Kanye, with their past two records, especially Kanye. It was such... Donda 1 and 2 were not good at all. They're bad, they're bland, they're boring. All of the Future sound just phoned in. It's not very, you know, music forward. It's not pushing in the envelope like he normally does, and, well, hasn't done in the past 6-7 years. But within that, you have so many people looking up to him and whatnot, that it's just bland. And it's gonna be interesting to see what happens to with the genre. But I hope artists like Kid Cudi, you know, can come in and make a little bit more records and whatnot, and to, you know, push upon some sounds and ideas that they had last year, and be a little more thoughtful with those and experiment a little bit more with some of the sounds that they've played with last year. There's one more artist I can't, and Young Thug, that's the other one. Even Young Thug, you had on his record, you had some interesting ideas and sounds that we both liked, and I want them to experiment more with that. So there are those little bits of glimmers of hope from artists like that, from, you know, even Staples, the Amines, Kid Cudi, Young Thug.
So shout out, let's give Baby Keem, Isaiah Baby Rashad, Keem's Vince not. Staples. Let's, yeah, all these artists.
Those guys,
as well.
Can make and, good. So yeah. There's. They have those ideas. They have those things that they can now, you know, experiment and produce a little bit more. But we need to stop giving attention to your YBs, your DaBabies. Those guys are just, they're awful. You know, even with Corday, we had some issues with them, and some of the other artists and whatnot that are supposed to be the biggest ones in the world, like the best flow in the game. I'm like, they're not. They're not even remotely
close. Corday was latest album, and I had a lot of hope with Corday. It was a little bit of a snore, and I hope he returns to form. But
exactly.
My big thing that I want to highlight here, and maybe this is like the bombshell take of the episode, is rap is an old aging genre right now. Like, you have the old heads, which still like have their own corner, but increasingly you have people who like have not fully had closure from like the Kendrick, Drake, Kanye era, and we're still living in their world. And it's terrible because you aren't getting more music to get to bubble up from the surface and really take on here. And it's not going to be until some of these rap heads start to move forward from this old thinking until we'll get some of this better thinking. Because I get like Genesis Owusu's record that was like a little bit of indie, a little bit of spoken word rap. Incredible. You have Little Sims, you have Dua Saleh, you have so many of these artists out here who are pushing the boundaries with sound and soundscapes. Like I said, Snot is definitely going to be one of my favorites coming in right here. But what needs to happen is both on the production side, you need producers who come to the game every single day going, I'm not going to make what I heard yesterday. I'm not going to make what I heard last week. I'm not going to make what I heard like months ago, because this genre is on life support right now. I may not feel like it, because much like electronic music, more on that later, you still get the audiences, you still get the fans, you still get the recognition, it's played already, but what's being played is the stuff from 3-4 years ago. The stuff that needs to be relevant, the stuff that needs to be new, we need to be pushing on that more. And you're getting it in some places, like we've mentioned, we just need more of that. And on the rap side, my final point is on the rap side, we need, like, not more Kendricks in the sense that I want people to sound more like Kendrick, but Kendrick can do different flows. Kendrick can do different beats. Like, we need rappers who are good rappers because they are versatile, because they can do different things, because they can work in different genres. That's what makes a good rapper, not just because they represented their hood and died early. All right? Like, our standards for good rap have got to, like, get back to the actual music and how it sounds, the actual, like, lyrical quality of that. And okay, I've moved on from being an anti-mumble rap guy to being I like the rhythmic kind of shit too, all right? But that needs to have a purpose as well, because you've seen it in our stances on recent trap reviews, and we're going to continue. Like, if this was 2017, we might be nicer to some of these albums, but we've heard this already and we've heard it too much already. So if we keep hearing this, we're going to be part of a tide of people saying, do something different. Shout out T-Pain.
Exactly. He is 100% right on that too. T-Pain knows what's up. Moving on, because we could just rant for fucking 4 hours on Rap a Trap, because it's a genre that we both really like and whatnot too, and we want to see succeed. So I feel very good on that. Now moving into my favorite genre, and another one that we have a lot of opinions for, alternative / indie / rock. We'll do all three together because they all intertwine together in that way. And anyways, right, I don't want to, it's super right now, and I don't feel like sitting here for 28 hours doing a fucking GRE, except I need to wear a bow tie now and speak with lobsters in my mouth or some shit. Pause. Anyways,
we would have so many, if we actually did a style podcast like that, we have so many like disclaimers on every like platform we're on.
God, the amount of disclaimers we'd have to put on that, because you know I'm not holding my mouth for 4 hours.
Hour two, you're gonna get some real Sean and Dan here.
Hour two, it's just at that point it just ends up being what we, our text conversations and stuff. Her emails.
Okay, but yeah. So yeah, we love our alternative indie and rock here. But we do. I mean, other than indie and a little bit more recently with indie, it's been a troubled area of music recently. We had our like big Rock is Dead conversation from State of Music a couple years back. And at the end of that, Sean's point was that rock is dead, indie will save it. And that's largely come true.
And that has very much come true. You have some artists that have actually made very, very good rock albums the past year. My favorite one being The War on Drugs. Their record was fucking incredible. So you have these, some rock artists and whatnot. It'll be interesting to hear this year because you have like Red Hot Chili Peppers coming out with the record. You have The Smile, which is Johnny Greenwood, Tom York, and Dan Skinner on drums. A little three-piece band coming out later on. You have Arctic Monkeys, which is, you know, that cross between alternative and rock. So it'll be interesting to see what they put out and how that kind of, how that reception goes of those releases, to hear how that goes. But within that, with last year and the year before, you had indie really, really save rock in the way that it was produced and whatnot. You had, like, example, you had Doves, you had Folds, you had War on Drugs, where they had so many influences from indie and from other things within alternative scenes and whatnot that were then picked from other scenes naturally, because that's where they got the ideas from in the first place, then get into rock. And that's what really saved the genre. Now there's a lot of, you have Idols, you have a couple other bands and stuff that I just can't think of off the top of my head that have made good records now.
Not to mention the individuals, like, and the individual women especially. Like, we've talked about women in indie killing it from the top to the bottom, from your, like, Fiona Apples all the way down to Sofia Valdez. Like, there's...
Women in indie, because I was talking more about rock, but... The women in indie are so important. They're the ones that are really, really holding up the genre to a new degree. They're the ones that are pushing it forward, that are experimenting, that are really making it have a specific sound, right? Like, you had Snail Mail come out with a record that we both really like. You had B2B, who we both adore and whatnot on this podcast. You have Phoebe Bridgers, a couple others that are... They make indie sound like indie, right? Like, when you think indie, that's who immediately you think of. You think of these female artists that are really killing it. But within there, a lot of these other artists and whatnot can take that sound or take the ideas from that and then, you know, implement it into their own ways. What I don't want is for indie to get stagnant, which is my big fear this year. Is I hear a lot of, because you know is my main genre I listen to, I hear a lot of indies getting stuck in a trope of late 2010s, you know, early sound of 2020, 2021, like early-ish, and I see it more getting recycled about, and I don't want that. I want them to take the influences that those artists that they're copying from had at that time and to even implement it more into even, you know, oh, sorry, not implement it, but to improve upon it more and to do with more that they have, because there's so many ideas and whatnot that rock has done, actually, ironically. So within, like, my stay in the music industry, I think actually rock is in a very good place for the first time in a long time. And we saw that, like, there's a lot of rock albums last year that we really liked. Like, if I go back to our Google Drive. Let me do this real quick. On the fly, because this is how we fucking do this podcast. We're doing it live. Fuck it. But if we go to the awards show, and you go to, like, the rock category, like, let's go, Return to Form, Best Pop, Best Neo Pop, Song of the Year, goddamn, the holy shit. This thing is wild. I forgot how crazy it is. But, like, example, like, you had Wolf Alice, Idols, Django Django, War on Drugs, Killers. Those albums and whatnot for rock have really surprised me in how well they did, how well they were received, how well we both liked them and whatnot. And within that, it's actually at a steady place for the first time, I think, in close to a decade, I'd like to say. And it was saved by indie. But now, ironically, I think indie needs saving from itself. I think indie has a specific sound, it has a place to be, but now it needs to even do more of what they have. They've had so much of an influence in music and pop and neo-pop and rock, even in EDM, that now, unfortunately, with all of those influences, since so many people now are kind of making the sounds, they now have to almost reinvert their sounds and, you know, reinvent some of themselves so that way they don't get stagnant. And that's what I worry is that, because of how much success that they've had and how many sound influences and whatnot. Like, example, a lot of the 80s beats and 80s sounds you got from pop originally really came, obviously, from the 80s, naturally, but originally came from the indie scene. You know, you got your Neon Indians, your Tori Amos of the world, you know, your... and those beats got influenced and then popped up. And now, like, they changed their sound. I mean, Tori Amos always does completely different sounds. Neon Indian's going to release an album this year and be interesting to see how that sounds as well. And that indie is going to have to make a pivot away from that, like, bedroom pop sound, from that 90s grunge sound, and now they're going to have to really find a different thing so that way they don't get stagnant. You are muted, good sir.
Yes, thank you. Sorry. Thank you. I need to jump in there because there's so much of that that was, like, really good that I agreed with. But that's my camera. But the... so much of indie right now, like, indie is the darling of the ball, so to speak, right? Like, I've talked about how much I like electronic in rap music, but Indian rap music has really been hidden lately. But I'm so worried about the same thing as well, is the stagnation of indie music and no longer it being able to push and renegade all the other genres forward, doing the work the other genres aren't doing of being a little bit different, right? And so I think that, thankfully, I'm weirdly optimistic about this, that indie music is better equipped than pretty much any other genre to reinvent itself, to push other boundaries, oh, and do other different things. Just because we review all the other genres every single week, other than maybe folk, I'd say, which I'll say that right now. I think folk could be a really interesting angle for indie right now, because it's just having folk, a moment where it's doing the thing where it's pulling from other genres to make itself more interesting and to bring more fans into it.
Example, I think Big Red Machine is a great example of folk that can twist Americana, that can twist 80s beats and other things too, and
Big
make
Thief
it an album.
Also.
That Big Thief is another one too, that, like, within that, example, yeah, we got, you know, Big Red Machine to the tail end last year and Big Thief 2 weeks ago. Example, those
Waxahachie, I would say, to some extent. We reviewed her a while ago, but yeah.
Those you could do a lot with. There's a lot of different sounds in there. Like, example, I fucking hate country with passion, but I thought that with Big Thief, some of the things that they made, I was like, oh, well, this is actually a very interesting sound that I haven't heard that I'm really actually like, that you can, you know, pull from. And within that, then you could do so many different sounds within that. So I think, Dan, you're really right on that, nailed it on the ball. I also agree with you that out of all genres, I have the most hope for indie in that way. I just don't want them to be stagnant, but I have faith that they can do that pivot, that they can make that sound adjustment, whatnot, because they always have.
Definitely. And yeah, I want indie artists to branch out from bedroom pop. It's a good place to start, but find new places, find new ways to inspire and enchant your audience, truly. Get them to fall in love with the genre all over again by giving them stuff that isn't cookie cutter. And unfortunately, bedroom pop is starting to become cookie cutter because everyone who's like getting there into the mix of indie, because that's the cool thing, is like starting to do that now. And so there's so much talent out there. There's so much like good brain space out there. Push that forward. I'm happy with that. Now let's go to our favorite piñata, electronic music.
Favorite piñata, goddamn.
This is like, Audio Face is straight up the like abusive boyfriend in the relationship with electronic music.
You make me do this. Actually, I think EDM for the first time in a long time is making a step in the right direction.
Okay. I'm a lot less optimistic, but let's go.
But only certain artists. The issue with EDM is you have to sift through a lot of garbage, and it's going to be like that for the foreseeable future. You have to sift through your marshmallows. You got to sift through your Stevie Aoki's, your Marshmallows, your Dylan Francis of the world, where they just sound bland and shit. But you can get really good EDM, like example, Swedish House Mafia.
Before you get into this, it's going to continue even more, because as we'll get into another part of this larger state of music conversation, concerts are back, touring is back, and so all the live DJs are back, and so all the DJs who have learned nothing over COVID lockdowns and experimented virtually nothing are going to be redoing their 90-minute sets, pressing spacebar in 60 cities around the world for the next 3 years. And so you're going to have to be sifting through other things like that. But Sean, as you were saying about Swedish House Mafia.
Yeah, so you have some bigger name artists that I think are doing good with what they have. Naturally, like, I think Swedish House Mafia will be interesting how they sound live and whatnot, but I thought their stuff was very good from what I heard. And like example, Rez, like a return to form of a EDM artist that we really like. So you have some artists that will make very good music and very good EDM, which is good because I miss that experimentation. I mean, we literally just went over Chanel Tresse's album, and I absolutely loved. And I'll put that solid in the EDM category. Shut up, Bonobo. Exactly. So there's really good EDM. You had Forte last year, and you had a couple other like single tracks and whatnot that have come out. Also, Free Forte. More on that later.
I'll say really fast. Like one, not to tangent you too much, but one thing that is uniting all of that stuff is that's really chill. It's annoying because, like, I think there are a lot of EDM fans out there who like the fast-pacedness of it, but also see that, like, okay, it gets a little bit repetitive, it gets a little bit less creative. They listen to the chill stuff, and they're like, okay, there's a lot of creativity here, but I like electronic music for, like, the pump and the action. And so I think that's a big avenue for people to actually get into, which, once again, goes, make it hype, make it fun, make it something that people enjoy, but do something fucking different.
The thing is the issue is how people grew up with electronic music. So Americans really didn't grow up with a lot of electronic music as much. You know, it was usually very underground, especially like, you know, when I was a kid growing up. You don't I knew nobody who knew house music, who knew techno, who knew, you know, obviously there's so many different variations of house.
Like the real subgenres. It wasn't really a big thing for us until dubstep.
Yeah, it really wasn't until the early 2010s. And even dubstep, I knew from Scream in 2006. So I knew, you know, Scream, Khan, all these other artists on the Medi level label that they had, like, such a profound influence on UK dubstep, even garage and house and whatnot, that when it came here, it was so distorted and sounded completely different than what it ever was. That like Scream and a couple other of those people, they left the scene and ended up doing completely different stuff. That's actually why he's my favorite DJ. More on that at some point, whenever I do a Just a Sean episode, whenever the fuck that happens. But anyways, within that, the issue is so many people weren't exposed to it until the early 2010s, at least here, that became the popular sound was, you know, your hypey-typey stuff, because that was the only thing that they understood. But more and more people need to get exposed to your underground music, you know, your underground DJs, your underground mixes, all of the different variations of house that you can get. And within that, more and more mainstream artists need to dive into that. They need to dive into old UK dubstep, old UK garage and stuff, and even drum and bass and some other sounds that they can take influences of and make into different tracks, which some guys are doing, you know, Bonobos of the World or Fortets and whatnot, but they're not big enough to really completely shift the industry into what it needs to do. And within that, there are very, very good artists that are pushing that forward and are pushing that sound, which is why I'm hopeful for it, because I'm hopeful that somehow more and more people are able to listen to that and able to get into it and then demand, you know, other bigger artists and whatnot to experiment and to do different things. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. I mean, you're always going to have your bullshit artists, your hyphy-typhy peoples for the rest of EDM eternity, because it's a cash cow at the end of the day. But there are more and more people that can do better with what they have. And the big thing, too, is what I'm really, really interested in looking forward to is live music within EDM, because a lot of music for EDM, for electronic, needs to have a live setting. So I'm very excited to go to these underground clubs that have been closed for the past couple of years, you know, these big electronic festivals and other things too, to hear what that sounds like on the ground, what the mixes are like, what DJs are making and whatnot. I mean, we're always going to be disappointed by some people doing those, but then you're going to find artists here that are making really good sets, and then we got to just, you know, get them out to the people and to have more and more people listen to them. So that's kind of where I'm hopeful in that way.
Yeah, I, on that live music point, I will be going to a number of really big festivals. I'm going to Coachella this year. I've just been roped into going to Primavera Sound in Barcelona in June.
Oh, you're in the Barcelona one? Shit. I want to do the LA one, because that's actually Arctic Monkeys are fucking headlining that.
Oh, that would be dope. But, like, I think that'd be, like, you hit some of the underground ones. I'll do some of, like, the big festivals around here.
I'd love to do that, yeah.
In purely journalistic and possibly tax-writable purposes, we will be going to different...
Yo, if I get tax write-off going to shows, that would be beautiful.
Syndicate 23 LLC, baby. I'm kidding. I'm actually not sure how that works, so IRS, don't come after me. But, like, that being said, if it works, it works. If it fits, it ships. But that's a really good point, because I think you get the difficult thing, we've talked about this so much on Audioface, is that when you review electronic albums, you can't, because so many electronic albums are mixes of other things that are super hard to clear, that a real good electronic experience is a DJ set that goes on for like an hour and a half. We are mixing different songs, some new, some old, but you get these like really good beats in the middle, right? And so overall, I am really looking forward to that experience, but I really think that that shouldn't be a roadblock for electronic DJs. I think that they should, or electronic artists. I know I've made that distinction in the past, but I think that you should still be able to give people that experience of hearing an album all the way through that sounds like a mix that maybe includes some things that are sampled, but maybe just includes things that are really cool. Like, The Avalanches, super curveball, because they're not technically electronic music, but their early albums were definitely really dance-inspired. They were, after a certain point, because Plunder Phonics and sampling things gets, you know, cumbersome and expensive and tedious, they would just recreate and make the sounds they wanted to. I think, and this also touches into other things we'll talk about very shortly, but as we're wrapping up electronic music, I think that the more electronic appreciates but not appropriates world music, looking at you, Diplo, the more that you can get a lot of influences, because I think Disclosure, and not always the best way, but in like largely, I think, a good faith way, got a lot of influences from world music and dance music in Latin America, dance music in Africa, dance music that is in Muslim nations, dance music that is in East Asia, South Asia. Like, there's so many other things you can pull through and also unite people in this pretty turbulent time through the world through music. Not saying it's going to be the end all be all, like David Guetta doing that Black Lives Matter thing, like, and this next drop is for George Floyd, or that latest DJ thing where, like, in the corner of this mix is just like a flag that says you stand for Ukraine. Like, none of that nonsense, right?
Jesus
Christ, please don't, you know, like, in the way that music can, you know, and the way that it's done for Sean and I, and the way that's done for many of the audience's viewers here, they listen to it and they go, oh, that's interesting. I want to learn more. And then you end up going through a rabbit hole and you end up learning something really cool about a culture or an industry or a person or a country or whatever that is for you. Music is a journey that's more than just the sounds. And so I think electronic can be one of those genres that takes people through that journey in the most beautiful way possible. But like with all other genres we've talked about here, it will require actual inspiration and creativity from those artists and drive. That's not a lot of what we're seeing here. We're seeing it from a few artists, but not enough. So overall, at least from me, from electronic, more albums that sound like mixes, that go through like mixes, that go really hard, that I can share with people that are hype, but also creative, that take influences from the world at large. I'd say you'd agree more or less.
100%. Yep.
Yes. And so that was the first, I'd say like 3/4 of the conversation of the state of the genres. I think we hit those very well. But now we're going to go into the state of the industry. This is a little bit of an even higher level conversation, yeah. Not even just the sounds, but also things that are happening in the music industry that will influence the sounds very much in what we're talking about. And I think we have really 4 interesting subcategories here that we'll go through really fast, in no particular order of importance. But I do find this one to be very interesting. Live music.
Yeah.
So, I think, first of all, go into your thoughts about live music, because I want to hear what you have to say.
Yeah, live music is getting more and more because, you know, as more restrictions fall, as more, you know, countries and states and counties lift restrictions and whatnot with COVID, more and more artists are going to be going in and touring, because there's actually been a lot of artists, like, example, Fleet Foxes, they're like, eh, we're going to cancel a lot of our shows because we're still not comfortable playing at shows or whatnot, and now a lot of those artists are like slated to play, and they said, oh no, we're come summer, we're going to play. So this summer especially is going to be huge for live music. I mean, you have the first Primavera Sound in LA that'll be happening in September, which I really fucking want to go to for that Sunday for Arctic Monkeys, and a few others. It'll be interesting to see how it goes and whatnot. And you have so many more and more live shows that are slated, more and more artists that have, you know, example, Arctic Monkeys and a couple other, and like Neon Indian and Tori Maugh and a couple other guys that have announced shows, like Kendrick Lamar as well, but they haven't released albums yet. So it's gonna be interesting to see when they do their albums, even like The Smile and a few others. They've announced tours, so it'd be cool to see how they complement that with album releases. But then also the other thing too, is to see how well people respond to going to these events. You've seen it here in the States that, you know, they're pretty, people are really going to them. So it'll be interesting to see how it is throughout the rest of the world. See how comfortable people are, how well those events sell. And that's also, speaking of sell, that's another issue too within live music, is so many people are trying to go to live music that some places are going to get sold out so fast, also because you have bots and other issues within getting tickets to people, that people are going to have a hard time going to see live music in a way. So it's going to be really cool to have that experience back again. Like, example, Dan going to Coachella, it'd be cool to have him report there, re-report You Decide, and to hear him, you know, the experiences on the ground of that. I mean, I'm going to go to some stuff sometime this year, and it'll be interesting to see how they go with more and more lifted restrictions, how comfortable we are, how comfortable people are on the ground, because I really want to ask people that too, and to see how musicians do it live. Because that's one thing that needs to be said too, is a lot of these musicians have not played live music in quite some time, and it'll be interesting to see how well they sound, if they even, you know, they gel together well, or if maybe they have some misses here or there, or even within that they gain inspiration from their things, because, you know, they've had that hiatus, they've had that time gone and whatnot. Like, example, I was listening to Lauren Mabry, who, she is the lead singer of Churches, and she was saying that it was really nice for them to go back to live music, because they said that they gained inspiration, even though they had their album released last year, Screen Violence, which we both really enjoyed. They said that even within just doing that tour, they got a lot of feedback with their music, and like, oh, cool, we really want our now, you know, we want to go back and record more. We want to go back and go more in depth into what we did then. and to try to make a different sound and whatnot, different ideas, even different concepts wanted in that. So it'll be interesting to see how artists and bands and stuff do with that. And I'm very, very excited for it.
Yeah.
Also, I'm excited for people saying that I'm going to the Crypto.com arena.
I'm never going to say it. I'm still going to say I'm going to Staples Center.
It's always Staples. Oh, it's always
Staples. As I'm scanning tickets, it's like, oh, they say Staples Center on them. No, they say Crypto. No, they say Staples Center. Two plus two always makes five. And so I'm really interested in the live music aspect. I'm also cool. I can be a doomer here for like 30 seconds. People don't know how to behave. People don't know how to act. After COVID and after all these lockdowns and restrictions and whatnot. And so people are going to be really tense. I hope we don't see more repeats of like the Travis Scott Astroworld situation, but we might. And I hope that artists do what they've largely been doing, which is saying like, hey, we will stop shows to make sure people are safe at our shows, because that's super important. But on the other two last things I want to address from what you said are ticketing. We covered a lot of stories on Audio Face where like they were about to like solve the bot issue, where like it was a little bit creepy data wise because like I think they were testing it with data Swift. That's a Freudian
slip.
That's a Freudian slip. They're testing it with Taylor Swift, and they were like, okay, we're gonna verify how much of a fan you are based on other activity you've done, and if you like have done that, then we'll give you the tickets. Like, cool. I think there are a number of different ways you can experiment with making sure that bots don't get tickets, people do. And I think we just need to try more of those ways possible, because you are getting, maybe not, I'm speaking super anecdotally, but I'm definitely hearing people who are like having really a lot of trouble getting tickets. And like, it shouldn't be like the Super Bowl where the nosebleed seats to experience live music are $5,000. I don't believe they should be $150. I believe like concert tickets should be like no more than like maybe 2 hours worth of minimum wage salary at most, right? Like they should be universal experiences, but like that's Power Report for you. That's a different podcast. Like, but hopefully concerts are accessible and affordable. And here's something maybe the streaming giants could do to make me hate them less. If they spend some of their goo gobs of money the same way Netflix is doing to save certain theaters that are going out of fashion because of the way streaming is accidentally killing them, maybe if the streaming giants went, we are going to make it so we have these like avenues that more fans can watch live music, whether it's through streaming more concerts or like making it so maybe like you sign in with your Apple Music subscription or some other way of verifying you are a real person, right? In order to do these things. I don't think that's the best way, because you can make a fake Apple Music subscription or whatever. And I also don't want it to be like, oh, all the Apple Music heads watch the Weeknd show or whatever, right? But although it would be fun to go to like an all Bandcamp Epic Games show.
That would be actually pretty funny if that happened.
Yeah, I think we're good on live music. I want to go to Americana's Time to Shine. And so I you want to start with that?
That's interesting that you put that in there. Because we have talked about Americana a bit, especially towards the latter half of last year. I have opinions on it. So I don't think it's going to be like the genre's Time to Shine, Americana's Time to Shine. I think more group projects, more like example within indie, you can have a lot of different artists and different collaborations pull from Americana in that way. But I don't think entire projects, entire albums are going to be Americana focused. But I think one-off tracks and one-off things, you know, Taylor Swift, Lana Del Rey, a couple others that they can get onto tracks and pull from it. And you might have some inspirations from it, but I don't really see it becoming a mainstream thing or becoming a thing that you see within a lot of indie and a lot of genres with a lot of albums in their concepts and whatnot. I don't see it taking off that much. But I could see people getting influences from it in that way and to experiment with it, but not necessarily make like straight up Americana records. I just don't think there's a market for that. I don't think, because you had that example with Lana Del Rey with, you had her two records, Chemtrails of the Country Club, and I forget what the other one was that came out shortly thereafter. And Chemtrails was more of your Americana record. Example, like, a lot of the Jack Antonoff productions are more of your Americana stuff and the Lord record and whatnot. You had a lot of people that didn't like it. You had a lot of people that said, hey, this is something that we don't necessarily really like. Fans of those artists when I said this isn't the direction we like them to go. So I just don't think that that can be a rare, like that could be a future and have a market for it. But I think there can be one-off tracks, there could be one-off singles or one-off things with collaborations between artists to make it there. So it'll be there. You'll hear that sound in records. Like, it'll stay for sure. It'll be in influences, but it's not going to be entire projects. I just don't see it happening.
Yeah, I would agree with you there. Maybe my framing on this was a little bit interesting and as usual, sort of like a...
it's an interesting conversation because you had a bunch of records at the tail end of last year that all had Americana in it. Had a lot
And I think maybe it's just more of like my own personal branching out and like my own sort of like circles I'm running with. But like, I think that... Yeah, I would agree with you. I think it's going to be hard for certain aspects of like folk and Americana to be like mainstream and have like a number one record. Counterpoint, like our friend of the show Morgan Wallen is like in the middle of the year, I never checked the like end of year 2021 charts, but like, he was one of the top three most popular streamed artists in America. Mm-hmm. Right, so like there's this like thirst out for it. I still would agree with the ultimate point, like I don't think there's gonna be like a major country. I'm close playing Americana, folk, country, these sort of particularly like United States based like sounds. I know it's hard to do that in this kind of conversation, but we put alternative Indian rock together, so like work with me. Like,
yeah, I mean, yeah, you could have some of those in there, but
my ultimate point is that I think these influences are going to start to be kind of undeniable in music. Like, maybe it'll make its way to indie, but I think it's also going to make its way to rap. I think it's also going to make its way to pop.
Pop for sure, because it already is, but rap and trap, I don't see it with the producers that are doing it right now. I would be very,
I don't know why not. I mean, like, they live in the same place. Like, it's one of those points where, like,
it is literally the same place, but I don't see them branching out into that. I don't see the rap and trap producers branching out in that way.
I don't see a ton of it, and I don't know if it'll make it mainstream, but I definitely see, like, some of the TikTok things definitely happening. I could see it where you get certain, like, little memes. Like, Old Town Road was kind of like a flash in the pan, but I think as people are starving for different things, and honestly, maybe this is like my cynical side talking to certain people from this part of the country, but I think certain pandering to like aspects who love this part of like music and tie it to American identity per se will find ways to blend that, and that might start to increase in the forefront. I don't know. This is one of my curveball opinions. You never talk about the opinions you're wrong about. This might be one of those ones I'm wrong about. But
we'll find out.
Again, I think maybe Time to Shine might be too much. But I think I would be surprised if we checked in, like, by the time we do this next year, if I haven't started making Sean do TikToks. And we haven't noticed, like, okay, yeah, we are starting to see it wasn't just, like, Big Thief and Big Red Machine. You're starting to see like these influences not only in their respective genres, but starting to bleed out in other places. Maybe not everywhere, but something that's bubbling up.
Yeah. Moving on to album versus mixtape. This is interesting.
Audio face debates.
Because we've already seen this happen so many times. Like, what is an album? What is a mixtape? An interesting thing is right now, because of streaming, because of the way that the music industry is and whatnot, we have so many albums getting shorter. We have so many albums, you know, coming out saying that they're LPs and they're like 35, 40 minutes. When those used to be mixtapes back in the day, you know, like five, or 6 years ago, or EPs, we would say, oh, you got a 30-minute thing, that's an EP, that's a mixtape, it's whatever. And this is why we made the drop category for Audio Face, because it's hard to say an LP is 30 minutes because that's not a long play. But, you know, in Spotify or in, you know, voting committees and whatnot, they'll say that it's an LP, but it's really not. And but they don't want to say it's a mixtape, or they don't want to say it's an EP or whatnot, for the purposes to make more on it because of streaming and how it works. So within that, like, to me, an album is usually at least 8, 9 to 12, 14 songs long. Anything over that, and you're getting like into YB territory. Matty Healy, I'm pointing at you. Don't make a fucking long record.
But if you, okay, here's my end spec, and this is like a not a hard and fast rule, but I'd say after doing this podcast 5 years, it kind of is. 16 songs, 55, 58 minutes, and it better be good. At that point,
it better be good.
Anything beyond that is usually like begging for more time than is required than for this podcast, or should be required. 16
songs is a lot. Like, Radiohead don't make albums that long. I don't want anybody to make a record that long. Honestly, I like the 12 songs, 50 minutes is like my perfect zen. Like, I love a record being that length. That is my favorite. Within that, there's mixtapes and whatnot where you can get 30 minutes, 35 minutes, and it still be considered an EP or a mixtape to me, especially with artists who have made LPs that are past the 50-minute mark, and now you're going to try to throw me off with like a 30-minute record and say it's an LP. That's not an LP, dog. That's an EP or it's a mixtape. It's not an LP because you have it in you. The interesting part is you have newer artists and whatnot who only make short records because, you know, that's kind of what they've done the past 2-3 years, to say that that's all that they do and those are their LPs. I still don't want to call it an LP because it's not like a full album. That's why I like to say record and not album. And within that, those are going to be your EPs, those are going to be your mixtapes. But I understand why they're doing that, because of the way the music industry and streaming works. It's the easiest way to monetarily gain the best bang for your bucks. That way you don't have to spend so much time in the studio, because studio time is money. Producers cost money. Managers cost money. All those things add up. They add up a lot. And if you're not going to get streamed that much because, you know, not many people want to listen to something that's over an hour long, you have to break it up and you have to make 2 a year or something like that, and you'll get more streams, you get more plays, you get more revenue, you get more money. And within that, that's just a vicious cycle. That's just the way it's going to be going for the time being. But this is, again, why we have the drop category in Audioface, because you'll have people that make, you know, a 5-song thing, a 4-song thing, and they don't want to even call it a single or an EP. But those are drops, too. So you're going to see, you're going to continuously see these shorter records. Example, Channel Trace. He had an album right now that was, 7 songs, 35 minutes. That's like that firm category of drop to me, because it's not an LP. It's not a full album. It's a nice record. It's a nice little EP, even to me, for how short it is. Both in that, like, with artists who have already put out stuff that's longer, they don't necessarily need to do that to say it's an LP. They have their places for those things. Honestly,
to me, I hate the debate because I feel like it's a cop out. Like, I feel like if an album doesn't do that well, it's a mixtape. Or if an album put together well, it's a mixtape. But I'm like, listen, I hear things. I think this is partially influenced by platforms. Like, platforms should maybe have a mixtape category so artists can say this is a mixtape or this is an album or this is an EP or whatever. But this is the result of too many artists making unfinished albums and then making too many 100%. Mixtapes that sound like albums, right? Like, the line is blurred so much. And back when you had this distinction, a mixtape was usually has nothing to do with the label. It's just like an off-release type thing.
Now all these things are already released through the labels. You already recorded, but they didn't fit on the album that you made. And like, here you go. Here's some unfinished ideas and whatnot. And it's a mixtape.
Which, by the way, used to be just called an EP. Like, it's
exactly.
And then I'm totally fine because mixtape has its own history in rap music. I'm fine with that terminology. At this point, now we're just rambling about terms, and like, I don't care about that. Again, power report for that. But I think most of the time it's a cop out. I think it's generally down to time is the first thing. That 35 to 40 minutes, usually once you cross 40, it's definitely an album. You can get a little wiggly in the 30 to 40 minute category, as we've seen, but pretty much anything under, even if it can be really good and complete, as some albums have been, like the Vince Staples self-titled project, it's still just like too short to really be called a full album. Mm-hmm. And so, that being said, a mixtape, what meaning does that have in 2022? I'm not really even sure at this point. So when things are called mixtapes to me, like, I take it with a grain of salt, as I continue to do on this podcast. But, like, I just think it's like an interesting conversation to have because it's like, it's so nebulous, right?
Yeah, 100%. And last category, and this would be an interesting one too, is new ways for artists to get paid. So with NFTs and stuff and Web3 and all that jazz and
talking about NFTs, and, gentlemen. Two guys talking about non-fungible tokens on the internet.
So we really were early talking about NFTs because the biggest thing about NFTs before they became, before it was all just crypto heads using it to make their crypto schemes and pump and dump schemes and all these other things, it was an interesting idea for artists to try to generate more revenue and artists to share different art and whatnot with fans and different projects and stuff with fans, so that way they can generate 100% revenue from that. Within that, now you have now a whole market of people just abusing NFTs and abusing these things for it, to now where it ruins it for artists, for genuine people who, you know, used it as an actual art form and art platform and stuff to way to make more revenue and for way to reach out to their fans and reach out to the community. Now with that, that's like the crypto community and whatnot kind of shot that in the foot for a lot of artists, and now they don't have that path that they had originally when NFTs were really first starting. This is like a year ago, year and a half ago, before it blew up, and we did talk about all that too. With that, now artists, now the way that they're getting more revenue and whatnot is from places like SoundCloud, places like Bandcamp, that are going out and sharing, hey, like, we're gonna give you guys more revenue, like, we're gonna give you more sharing, and they're being very transparent with that. SoundCloud has their program to, which they've done the past couple of years, to help up-and-coming musicians, help up-and-coming artists, to then fund them to then get up to it. So you have artists and whatnot now having to resort to alternate different ways to generate revenue, alternate streaming platforms and other ways to get that revenue in. And now a big thing too is, because more and more live concerts are coming back, because more and more live music is coming back, that's going to be a big, big revenue boost for a ton of artists. They struggle, so many artists and bands, groups have struggled throughout the pandemic and whatnot, and now with more restrictions being lifted up, more shows being up, more festivals being up and played, and, you know, shows and stuff selling out and people going to said shows, they're going to now generate a lot more revenue. And within that, then they're going to be able to afford that studio time, be able to afford to make more music and make new things as well. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens this year, especially with the space of NFTs and the space of live music and everything, to see how artists get that and to get that monetary value into them. And the last thing I'll say on it is, obviously, we literally just talked about it because of album and mixtape. More artists, and this is going to be a theme that's going to be around for the foreseeable future until streaming platforms change the way that they pay artists. More artists are going to pump out, like, a lot of music, but a lot of short songs, a lot of albums that have 16 songs, but they're only like 30, 35 minutes, because a lot of those songs are 2 minutes or even under 2 minutes, because the more streams they get, the more plays they get in that way, the more revenue they generate. So you're going to see that more and more, because it's going to be the easiest way for them to generate revenue. And within that, you can get this wash effect to where not many people are making quality music because of the way that they have to generate revenue, have to make a living. So I hope that streaming platforms change the way that they pay artists. I've been hoping this for years. I don't see it happening, except for your Bandcamps, your SoundClouds of the world that actually do and actually really care about artists in a way, compared to your Spotify's, your Apple Music, that really didn't give two shits about artists. All they care about is making money and their bottom line at the end of the day, because they're fucking they're like Boeing and McDonnell Douglas, merger that happened and destroyed the company, but more on that later. That's a PowerPoint episode one day. And within that, Dan's laughing. You have that, you have, you're going to be interesting to see how artists get paid within that. And I hope those streaming platforms change so that way they can go back to making longer tracks, a little bit longer records, and space those records out more so they have more time, more production value to actually make good records instead of these half-assed, half-made things just to generate revenue because they have to at the end of the day to make a living.
Yeah, so many points there I agree with or like take slight tangents with. The main thing is, you know what, I'm gonna do it. Let's talk about capitalism. So the main the reason that like the NFT craze happened with artists is because art is both lowest and highest on the totem pole. Like, rich people love it and feel some like feeling, and they feel like they can show their culture to other people with art. Simultaneously, artists are some of the lowest paid and lowest respected people in society. And so what you do is like what a lot of people do, from like sex workers down to marketing managers, is you just like run on the rich people. Like, you just like loot the rich people, basically. And you want to ultimately have this space where artists can make the amount of money that they should like be owed, whether it's like, okay, we make that an amount that's based on how many people view your work or how much like value that has. I think that's hard to really like suss out in a numerical fashion, as so many like hard capitalism lovers seem to want to do, but like, okay, whatever. The NFT craze was, like many crazes before it and after it, something that a lot of people were able to jump in on and look at as a speculative or, a speculative or an asset that they can use as a hedge against other economic factors that scare them, whether it's, you know, the dollar or inflation or things that are happening with wars and geopolitical crises and et cetera, right? So it seemed to be serving a benefit for rich people to be able to like store their money in something that had value. They were told is like new and cutting edge that had value, and a benefit for artists because they were making money and they're like, listen, I don't care what the rich people believe. I just want to get paid for my shit. And then of course, a benefit for the people who are skimming off the transactions here or there and continuing to sell people on this scam economy. More on this in Power Report in future episodes, right? But how it gets down to music, because of course I decided to jump into the heady thing, is a lot of what Sean was just saying. Artists are still unfortunately going to have a hard time getting paid because they are at the mercy of streaming platforms. And that's unfortunate. And we need to, as music lovers, support groups like the Union of Musicians and Allied Workers. We need to support and uplift artists and different platforms that are trying to think of better ways and smarter ways of paying people. And we've got to think beyond, okay, what are the quick, fast, get rich quick schemes? Like, what is making rich people richer? Like these artists and these DJs who are already touring around putting .eth in their Twitter handles, who have already made millions from streaming and touring. What are they benefiting from it versus what is the average artist who is trying to get in there and grow doing? Because we do this podcast in a kind of secret saucy way, the way we produce it, in like highlighting new music that people may have heard of the artist before, but also highlighting new music that is on the cusp of breaking out. That's something we can do because we're humans and we're not an algorithm. We're trying to like help people like get a wide, broad view of what new music is. And sometimes that's stuff from artists you've heard before. And a lot of times that's stuff from artists who are just breaking off on the cusp. And that's why we have our high standards. And that's why we do the podcast. But that whole system is not going to work if musicians and artists can't feel they're compensated or they're incentivized to get into the game. Because otherwise, you're just going to have what you have in the rest of our economy, which are remakes of sequels and continuations of products that Oops, All Berries, Cap'n Crunch. Like, there's no new ideas for anything. It's just like remakes of old stuff because there's charts that shows that people, that it does well. And there's no incentive to try anything outside of the box. That sort of gray, brutalist, capitalist thinking comes down to music, I think. And it's going to take a smarter system in order to fight that. That accidentally became a Power Report rant, but I think that will hold up.
It really did. I like it. State of the music industry, 2022.
Yeah. I think overall, I think the state of the music industry could be stronger, but it's pretty good. The world is going to be very interesting.
But it could be a lot worse. But with the return of live music, it's going to be interesting. I really looking forward to talking to more and more people about it as well, too.
And COVID is still a thing. People really want live music to happen because there's a huge financial incentive for that. But
naturally,
hopefully people are still able to stay safe and stay protected. And people who are more vulnerable to COVID-19 and other conditions like this, society doesn't forget about these people as well, because that's a lot of what's going on. These are, again, things that are motivated by money, not necessarily quality for what's good of people or what's good of, you know, art. But that's why you have shows like us and Audio Face and definitely not Pitchfork, but, you know, like other shows out there. And we'll shout out, like, in a rare time, we'll give a tip of a hat to some of our nameless other, like, media outlets and critics out there who also do a good job of keeping artists accountable, more or less. We often have our disagreements with individual album reviews, but it's good that you have this ecosystem of non-algorithms who are connected to music fans who are talking about what's good in music, what's bad in music, what's needs to be better, what could be worse. Like, and we hope to continue that on this podcast, on this YouTube channel, on wherever you are consuming us. So continue to do that. YouTube.com/audiofacepod, Twitter.com/audiofacepod, Instagram.com/audiofacepod. Reach out to us there, interact with us there. Every single little bit of any of that helps grow the show and get more people to get all this awesome message and all this music knowledge, and to help us even more financially and to get us to grow in even other different ways for all of my fun evil plans. Join syndicate23.co for syndicate23 membership. It helps us, like I said, grow the show, and we also reward you by giving you extra special benefits, including bonus episodes like the State of Music episode that come early and premiere for y'all. So thank you very much for doing all those things. Also, like, have notes in the announcements portion of the members platform for other different members perks that should be coming down the pipeline soon. And yeah, this has been Audio Face. We'll be back next week with more music. I have been, and still am, Dan from the Web on Twitter, Dan from the Internet on Instagram, Dan from the Web on Twitch, and Dan from the Internet on TikTok. Sean is SW Suarez on Twitter and Instagram, and it's staying that way. And like we said, we'll see you next week. Cheers.
Bye.